Okay, so we are here to witness the public examination of the dissertation by Master of Science Alexander Bosser. The title of thesis is Single Event Effects of Space and Atmospheric Radiation on Memory Components. The opponent today is Professor Fernanda Lima Kastensmith from the Institute of Informatics, Federal University of Rio Grande do Sul, Porto Alegre, Brazil. As a custos appointed by the faculty, I declare this public examination open.
Mr. Custos, Mrs. Opponent, dear jury members, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for attending the defense of my dissertation, Single Event Effects of Space and Atmospheric Radiation on Memory Components, which is a study that I carried out with the RADEP group of the University of Ubascula and the LEAM laboratory of the University of Montpellier over the last 4 years. Here's the outline of my presentation. First of all, I will explain why is radiation a challenge to the reliability of memory components. I will introduce a few radiation environments and give you a few illustrations of the problem. Then we will learn a bit about memory components. We will learn what is a transistor and see a bit of the architecture of those memory devices. Next, I will explain the effects of radiation on memory components, in particular, what are single event upsets and single event functional interrupts. Then I will expose my experiments, their main results and my findings, and finally I will conclude my talk. So first of all, what is radiation? Radiation is a generic term used to designate energy propagating either in the form of electromagnetic waves, so electromagnetic radiation, for example, radio waves, visible light, X-rays, and so on. Or it can also propagate in the form of energetic particles. So in this case, we're talking about particle radiation, which was the main focus of my research. These particles can be either muons, electrons, protons, neutrons, alpha particles, heavy ions, and so on. And radiation is present in every possible environment. For example, in outer space, there is a lot of radiation, charged particles coming from the sun or more distant stars. So you can see, is this
it's not on.
So as those charged particles are coming closer to the Earth, they can get trapped in the Earth's magnetic field, and they get trapped in and they form what are called radiation belts around the Earth, the Van Allen belts. If these particles come even closer to the Earth, they can start to interact with the atmosphere, and these very high energy particles collide with the molecules in the air, and they create these showers of particles, these particle cascade coming from the sky and towards the ground. Here we're talking mostly about neutrons, protons, muons, and the muons can even penetrate several kilometers under the ground. And of course, there can be a lot of radiation in certain industrial facilities, such as particle accelerators or nuclear power plants. And so in all these environments, you can find electronics that you want to work reliably. For example, interplanetary probes, GPS and communication satellites, airplanes, data centers, and of course, all sorts of industrial hardware. And in all these situations, the presence of radiation can be a challenge for memory reliability, as can be seen with these few examples. In the 1990s, Texas Instruments, a semiconductor manufacturer, opened a new memory manufacturing plant in Japan. And so they built the production line with the same machines and sending the same people as they had in their facility in the US. And the first devices to come out of the plant, they appeared to fail 10 times more often than the devices that were produced in the United States. And it took them a long time to figure out that the reason for this apparent difference in reliability was caused by the fact that in Japan, the devices were tested in a low-rise building, whereas in the US, the devices were tested in a building that had many stories, and these extra stories in the building were offering extra shielding from the cosmic rays. And so there was less radiation in the building. Another example is the Qantas Flight 72 in 2008. During a cruise flight, without warning, the flight control system triggered a sudden pitch-down maneuver, which resulted in all the people in the airplane which were not wearing their seatbelts being flung to the ceiling. This resulted in over 100 injuries. And even though the cause of this accident could not be pinned down for sure, one of the most likely triggers would be radiation-induced upsets in the flight computers. And there have been a long history of radiation-induced malfunctions in satellites. For example, recurrent failures in the TRDS-1 satellite attitude control system. So the satellite was always losing its correct orientation, and this was driving the ground controllers crazy. Or for example, the Curiosity rover on the surface of Mars in 2011 suffered a single event, like a radiation-induced malfunction, which caused a two-week-long cease of activity and troubleshooting for the ground controllers. So all these examples show that radiation can be a serious issue. So let's learn a bit about memory components. So these devices, random access memories, are a category of digital integrated circuits, which means that they are made up of billions and billions of transistors that are manufactured in parallel on large pieces of silicon, as you can see on this image. So on the other picture, you can have a zoomed-in view of the silicon, the piece of silicon inside the memory component. And you can see already that different regions can be identified on this piece of silicon with different types of circuits. You have, for example, the peripheral circuitry, which is located here, and which is used to access, to read from, and to write to the memory array, which is located here, and which is where the data is actually being stored. Here's a schematic of the organization of the memory array. As you can see, it's made up of millions and millions of memory cells, which are small circuits, and each of these circuits can hold one bit of information. So depending on the technology that is used to build the memory, the memory cells can hold the data in different forms. For example, in static RAMs, dynamic RAMs and flash memories, the data is held as electric charge. In ferroelectric RAMs, it's held as the electric polarization of a ferroelectric layer. And in magnetoresistive RAMs, it's held as the magnetic polarization of magnetic layers. Other technologies exist. But in the end, all these circuits are implemented using transistors. Transistors are the most basic structure in digital electronics. They are basically behaving as electronic switches, which are controlled by the voltage that you apply to their gate. As you can see on this schematic of a transistor, if you apply a low voltage to the gate, no current flows through the device. And if you apply a high voltage, the current can flow. So this is how you control a transistor. So now that we know how it works, we can see what are the effects of radiation in a transistor. For example, I focused mostly during this research on what are called single event effects. These are malfunctions that are caused by the action of a single energetic particle. Let's see what happens when a charged particle goes through an off-state transistor, so a transistor where you do not want transistor to flow through. The particle goes through the transistor and generates along its path what are called charge carriers. These are particles that carry each of them a single electric charge, either positive or negative. And these charge carriers will be collected, drift inside the transistor, and be collected at the electrodes. And so this motion of electric charge inside the components is, by definition, current flowing. So this means that after a particle strike, you have current flowing through your transistor that you would like to be turned off. So you have a problem. This can be the source of numerous types of malfunctions in memory devices. For example, if a memory cell is struck, the data that it contains can be corrupted. So this is called a single event upset. However, if the peripheral circuitry is struck, several cells can be upset at once, and large amounts of data can be corrupted at once. Among the categories of events that can happen when the periphery is struck are single event functional interrupts. So this means that the device loses functionality for a certain amount of time. And there are single event latch-ups also, which can occur. These are short circuits occurring inside the device. These types of events, they might permanently damage the memory. And even if they don't, as we have seen, data corruption can be a critical issue anyway for some applications. So now I will introduce my experiment. So to study the effects of radiation on memory, I used particle beams to simulate natural radiation environments. And so I could recreate the failure mode of this component. And I could then we were able to predict their sensitivity to radiation and predict the future failure rate during emission. So we traveled around Europe and to the US to expose those devices in different facilities that provide different types of particles. For example, we used protons at the University of Jyväskylä and in PSI in Switzerland, heavy ions at the University of Jyväskylä, at Genil in France and at UCL in Belgium, X-rays in the US at Argonne National Laboratories and at ESTEC in the Netherlands, and neutrons and muons in ISIS in England. So we irradiated five different memory components, which each of them represents a different type of memory technology. Here is what a typical radiation testing setting looks like. You typically have the device and the test. So here you have the memory connected to some controlling electronics, which is placed in front of the particle beam. And the test setup is connected to a computer. The computer is used to write data to the memory. Then you irradiate the memory with a particle beam, and then you read the data back. And if you see a difference between what you read and what you wrote, you know that errors have occurred and that these errors were triggered by radiation. So I created the software that was able to process these errors occurring in the device and generate what I call bitmaps from them. Bitmaps are a graphical representation of the data stored inside the memory component. So for example, on this particular bitmap, each memory cell in the device is represented by a single pixel. And if the memory cell was upset at some point during the test, the pixel is colored black. So creating this type of images allowed me to reveal statistical trends in the response of memory components to radiation. For example, I could prove that the proximity of a memory cell to certain types of device features inside the component could affect their sensitivity to radiation. I also showed that sometimes manufacturing defects still exist in devices that successfully pass factory quality checks. And in the presence of radiation, these manufacturing defects make the nearby cells more sensitive to radiation. As you can see on this image, all the memory cells located on this column were more sensitive to radiation and suffered upsets much more often than their neighbors. Another type of device, I carried out failure mode analysis. So I tried to identify the different ways that the device could fail. For example, here you can see small patches of upset memory cells, which were upset by the passage of a single particle. Here you can see larger patterns that are the result of a single event functional interrupt. Here you can see small patches of upset cells, which are the result of single event latch-ups, internal short circuit. And here you can see other like large clusters of events that are caused by another type of failure in the device's periphery. I carried out the same type of analysis on yet another type of memory, ferroelectric random access memories. And you can see that this device can fail in many different ways. Under radiation, it can have a single upset bit, partially or corrupted or completely corrupted memory word. You can have entire memory pages or entire columns losing their data, or even entire regions of the array losing their data. So to conclude, I would say that these tools that I developed and the studies that I carried out point out the strengths and weaknesses in the designs of memory components. So this information is valuable for the manufacturers, which are, of course, always trying to create more and more reliable chips. And also it helps the system designers, which use these devices, it helps them to use currently available devices at the best of their capacities. Also, all the data that was gathered during this study supported the development of a Pico satellite called MTCube, which is developed at the University of Montpellier. Its mission is on-orbit component testing. So all these devices that I tested are going to be sent to space for a mission duration of 2 years. And during 2 years, they will be exposed to space radiation. And we will collect all the errors that are occurring on these devices and comparing them with the data that we got on the ground and the comparison between the two shall help us to validate standard ground testing procedures for radiation hardness. So I will now thank you for your attention. And I will now invite you, Mrs. Oppenen, to present the commentaries to my thesis that you see fit.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, professors, Kustos. Yes, I will give now a short presentation about the importance of Alexandre's thesis and how he contributed to the state of the art of the research. So, as he's talked about, we are aware about the radiation environment and how this is important when we develop satellites or spacecrafts for missions. But not only that, so for example, in the environment we have protons, electrons, heavy ions, which actually Alexandre has done tests in the accelerators to evaluate the behavior of the memories under these particles. Also, he has mentioned, and then his thesis is focused more on single event effect, although he has already talked about total ionizing dose, yes, and latch up, but mainly the bit flip that occurs in the memory cell. So here we can see a SRAM memory cell, and as Alexandre has talked, for example, if a charged particle hits one of the drain of the transistor that is in off state, it can generate a transient pulse, a transient current. Then it's going to be seen as a transient voltage here that will flip the cell and change the value that you have stored. Also, this can occur in combinational logic that is composed of all the circuitry around the array, as Alexandre said. So this also can provoke faults. It's a problem also at ground level, as he's mentioned, for example, the neutrons. We have the different flux of neutrons, depends about the altitude where you are on the Earth. We have the South Atlantic anomaly, when you have a higher concentration also of particles. And then the neutron can generate secondary particles, as alpha particles, muons, as Alexandre also investigated in his thesis, the effect of muons in the memories. And in this case, we also can have bit flips and errors and actually suffice the failure interruption errors. So the main motivation, I just brought some examples, is because, for example, why do we care so much about memories? So, for example, as you know, all the electronics around us, they have many, many microprocessors, and for the microprocessor to work, they have lots of memory. So they have to store the program in the memory, you have to store the data, you needed to compute all this data information. So we see that we have hundreds of processors in many of these applications that must be reliable. And we needed to ensure that the correct data, the correct program is running in these systems. And then for the memory reliability, as he mentioned in his thesis, we are going to discuss more. We have the single event upset, which is only one bit has been upset, multiple bit upsets, multiple cell upsets, and many, many different types of failures as he investigated in his thesis, which is very important. And what a bit flip can produce? They can produce wrong data, so now you receive a different image that you were supposed to receive, or a different information calculation. The process can hang up and can actually lose his functionality for a certain period of time. You have a complete system failure. You cannot connect to your system anymore. Maybe you can reset and recover from that failure state, but sometimes you cannot, so you needed to think in other ways. So we needed to understand very well the memory, how it works, to also think about some fault-tolerant techniques. We do have red hard memories, which means that this memory has been developed by the designer, by the producer, to be red hard. You mean more robust to radiation. Okay, but these memories usually are very expensive, and they are not with very high density. So usually, sometimes it's not possible to buy these memories to your final application. So this is one from one of previous presentation that I had one time, but this fits very well his thesis, because this means that we want COTS memories, which means commercial off-the-shelf memories, memories that are low cost, high density, new technology. So his thesis actually investigated all these state-of-the-art memories under radiation. And then for that, you needed to understand the technology. So what he has done, understanding how is the architecture, how is the technology, how he could actually test, understand the architecture, and qualify under radiation. Yes, and this is the perfect step then for a further step to think, okay, so now if you take a look at system level, how can I develop some fault-tolerant techniques to work with the cells that you have tested it. So for example, he had mentioned an example of a CubeSat, which is this small satellite that is 10 centimeters per 10 centimeters here. So they are supposed to be low cost, low power, light. So you needed to use usually COTS memories, but we still needed to be aware about the fault tolerance and the effect. So as he presented, he tested these four type of memories, so four different technologies, high-density, state-of-the-art technologies, to understand how they will work. And now I will just briefly point to the contributions that I... So this, for example, just he presented also the static and dynamic test, but I would like to point out how complex it is to do these tests. Because the components are very complex. They have many, many functional modes that you needed to set up, understand well, to go through radiation. So the static test, mainly, you don't do anything with the memory. You just power up the memory, and you keep reading the memory. But just for that, you already needed to think about the data pattern that you are going to store in the memory and so on. And most important, to know where are your data in the memory, in the architecture? Okay, and so to do this reverse engineer to understand where comes your data. For the dynamic test, it's much more complex because you needed to read and write in many, many different modes, many different blocks, many different parts of the array. So you have many, many options to test. And the challenge is that because the technology nowadays, you have charge sharing, and you have all these upsets from the circuit, as you point out, we are going to have single bits, multiple cell bits, and how you count all these things. So for the dynamic tests, we are going to discuss a little bit more, but for example, he has proposed many different ways to do the dynamic test. Okay, just here is just like a way to say that you are going to write, read, and some ways that you are going to do all these tests. And also how to access all the different memories, the address. So there are many, many options that can be chosen. Also, just to point out, the complexity is like, for example, you have the logical bitmap, which means that, of course, when you access the memory, you think about the address 0, 1, 2, 3, and go on. It's okay, but this is the logical. Then you have the chronological bitmap, because, for example, when he is reading back from the bin, when the memory is radiated, you want to know if this bit occurs before that other bit, if the set of bit flips occur at the same time, or in 1 minute apart, or 2 minutes apart. So this is also complex to analyze all this data. And you have the physical bitmap, which really is inside the chip, which actually is a black box for us, because we don't know, only with doing the reverse engineer or being the designer. So the first contribution that I wanted to point out is the set of scripts and tools that he needed to develop based on his knowledge, architecture, and the study of the memories to understand all these maps. And this I liked a lot from your thesis, that you point out very well that if you just do it by counting the bit flips that he observes doing radiation and do the calculation of cross-section, which mainly is to divide the number of bit flips that you are counting by the fluence, which is the flux of the particles multiplied by the time that you expose the component under the radiation. You come out with a number, for example, that is this here, okay, 196 centimeters square, which is very big for a memory that we know that is very small. So this number cannot be real. So this means that we cannot just simple count bit flips and expect to calculate a cross-section. So what he has done is that he has classified, we don't need to read all this because too many information, but you needed to classify all the types of events, because some events are single, but some events are multiple, and we just need to count as one event and not thousands of events. And in this way, if you do, using this methodology, you come out with a realistic cross-section that you can compare with other members, other fabricants, other companies, and because you are counting now the events and not simply the bit flips, because nowadays it's not just one event is one bit flip. One event can be many bit flips according to the functionality. And another contribution is so is identify these complex events to correct calculate the dynamic cross-section. And also he had investigated, he didn't mention now in this presentation, but he also has investigated the layout of the memory and how this would affect the bit flips, the errors. So for example, just to point out some examples, cells close to the sense amplifier would not mainly change the, for example, the error rate, the variability of error rate in the memory array, it exists as expected. The proximity of the cells to the well taps, which is the body types, they exist. Or if you take the variability from one block to the other block of the memory, because you saw the figure there, that's a huge memory, there are many different blocks, you can also see a large variability in the error rate according to the blocks. Also, a big contribution about the moons and the low-energy protons. Also, for example, that mainly, I will just point out at the end, that you cannot basically just use low proton testing just to emulate moons, because moons due to the light weight, maybe not all the moons are going to really activate the SU in the sensitive volume. Many of them will stop before. So this was a large contribution also of the thesis. And to finally, for example, the last three type of memories are the memories that are non-volatile. What this means? Because SRAM are volatile, so actually if you power down, remove the power, they lose the data. So these memories are used for computation, the microprocessor runs the application, store the data, read, store new data, and so on. For this ferroelectric, flash, and for example, resistive memory, as they are no volatile, you want them to keep the data for a long time. For a satellite, for a car, for the avionic, we want to save this as our program or our data that is very important, and we don't want that to be corrupted. Otherwise, we needed to send new data remotely. No, so it's more complicated. So he investigated that, and what is very important, all the contribution, is that the peripheral circuit is very sensitive. So although the memory cell is robust to bit flips, the circuit is still very sensitive, and then this comes out with many CEFI, many failure errors, many bit flips that must be investigated. So the flash also, yes, you have analyzed that we have many errors in the columns, in the rows, and so on. And also for the for the magnetic resistive, you also had this investigation about maybe, for example, because we saw many, for example, latch up, yes? And for this latch up, we could actually maybe depolarize the layer and with that provoke the upset. So to summarize, okay, the main, Alexandre has done many contributions with his thesis. First, a new methodology to test these four different memories that are very different in architecture, in process technology. They are state of the art. They are important for many, many applications. To explain better the effect of a single bit upset, multiple cell upset, and then to discuss with the state-of-the-art area the limitations and the applicability of these memories for satellites and other applications that require a certain reliability. And with that, during his PhD, he published many IEEE journals, as we can see in the thesis report, yes, that shows the contributions. Yes. So, okay, thank you very much. Yes. Okay, so I'd like to thank again the invitation to be here. And now I have some questions, yes, about the thesis, and then we can discuss more. So first of all, I think, for example, your test was very well written, very well explained, yeah, the figures, everything. So I learned a lot reading your text. So congratulations, you and your advisors. Yes. So I will start more or less in chronological order with the thesis, but some things maybe will be out of order. So first, based on the introduction, I would like to start again with the commercial off-the-shelf components and about the CubeSat. So can you tell us a little bit more about the idea of using these memories in the CubeSat from LIRM, from the University of Montpellier, and how you see if the COTS will be able to work properly in the CubeSat, or maybe in some cases you will need to look for some red hard components?
So regarding the choice of devices, we chose these devices because they represent a vast array of memory technologies, both well-established as the SRAMs and the flash R, but also emerging ones as the EFRAM and MRAM. So since there's not that much flight experience available on these type of components, we figured it would be interesting to actually send some up there and have some actual flight data. As for the sensitivity, I see that on some devices, the MRAM in particular, the latch-up sensitivity may be an issue. But this is not intrinsically tied to the technology. So it's more about this particular component that is sensitive to latch-ups. But the MRAM technology is now showing promising development in its multiple iterations, be it like toggle MRAM like this one, and or like new, more advanced spin-talk transfer or TAS MRAMs. So these devices, as you said, the memory cell is very robust to radiation. And the periphery, of course, depends from component to component. So for the moment, Everspin, so the manufacturer that we chose, is the only manufacturer that makes standalone MRAMs, which is what we wanted to test. But lots of other manufacturers are working on their own products, which should be released in the upcoming years. And then we'll see if these devices they could very well be less sensitive to latch-up. And then these future devices should be really interesting, including the MRAM. As for the EFRAM, I think it's a matter of how you operate it. I pointed in the thesis that its failure rate can be greatly reduced if you just reset the device regularly, power cycle it, or put it in sleep mode. So if you know what you're doing, you can really reduce the failure rate to a minimum. So I think they're all really promising components.
Thank you. I have some questions related to that later, because now that you have tested all the memories and then this CubeSat is still in development, I understand that this CubeSat is going to be like a test bed for the memories.
Yeah.
But because now you saw so many things that you needed to develop a system around the memories in the CubeSat to be able to collect the data and to make it work, yes. And for the power, it's okay, yes. Of course, it's not, I mean, the focus of the thesis is not about the power of the memories, but I know that CubeSat have very low power limitations.
Of course, the power budget is a constraint, and so this is why also we are concerned about latch-ups.
Okay, but the plan is to put the four memories in the CubeSat.
So there's going to be more than this. There are like five types of memories. Flash device, 165 and 190 nanometer SRAMs from Cypress, and then an EFRAM and an MRAM. And the EFRAM and MRAM will be in 3D stacks, stack components assembled by 3D Plus. So in total, there's quite a lot of memory arrays in there. Yeah.
Then, for example, the chapter one, I would like to congratulate you. That's a very good review of radiation environment, very clear. You summarize very well, so it's great, yes. For the CubeSat, can you talk a little bit about the particles that we are more interested in?
Since the CubeSat is going to be in low Earth orbit, of course, we're mostly interested in trapped protons and heavy ions, cosmic rays. So neutrons and muons are more in the atmospheric part of my research. Yeah.
Thank you. The chapter 3, for example, a very good review also for the SRAM. I don't know, Arthur, if you wanted to put in page 29, it's figure 13, just that is going to be nice for the audience. So, for example, I understand, just to have some discussion about this and the previous page, actually, for them, they show the interleaving. Can you put the previous page? It's 20. Yes. So the interleaving is when you interleave the bits and so on. Yep. So these memories, they are all have interleaved bits.
So I can confirm that for the two SRAMs.
Yes.
And for the rest...
Yeah, but maybe the rest is not so important because they're not so...
It's suspected, but I can't say anything for sure. But yes, it's a common practice to separate the bits of a single word so that in case a particle strikes somewhere in the array and upsets the neighboring groups of cells, at least you won't upset several bits in the same word, so that behind, in software, you can correct the errors with the error-correcting code.
Because these members, they have error-correcting codes, yes.
So the 65-nanometer device has one, but not the 90.
But you didn't turn on, for example, the ECC during your test.
So the ECC was deactivated during the test so that we could actually see the clusters of errors happening. But, of course, in real-life operation, the ECC is active by default, and so the device is much less sensitive to radiation. Yeah.
But based, of course, that once you have the circuit upset, you have many, many upsets, that maybe not. But considering the multiple-bit upset that you saw, do you think that turning on the ECC would correct mainly the faults?
Well, in most of the cases, yes. It corrects all of the errors. We've had a few very rare cases of like peripheral upsets, creating like upsets on like a whole row of the array. So then in this case, of course, the ECC is overloaded. But in most cases, yes, the ECC suppresses everything.
Okay, that's good. Yes. About the angle, some tests you have done with angles, yes. So can you just discuss a little bit how angle actually contributes to getting worse the multiple bit upset? And multiple
So the idea of tilting the device to increase the... So to start with, I should mention the linear energy transfer, so which is a measure of the quantity of energy deposited by the incoming particle per unit path length. And so this is how you measure the ionizing power of a charged particle. And so you can, in theory, increase this LET to reach a higher effective LET by tilting the device in front of the beam. And so this means that the particle is actually going to go diagonally through the sensitive volumes of the memory. So if you take a square and go through the diagonal, the effective path is going to be longer.
Instead of doing that, it's going to do that.
Yes, so in the end, more charge can be deposited in a sensitive volume. Yes.
And then this increases probably
the increases the because of course if more charge is collected, the effects may be worse. So
then for the all the flash and the ferroelectric magnet resistive, with your methodology, could you actually recognize which will be the circuitry that are more susceptible to give the most important failures of the device?
So for the flash, for example, I don't have precise knowledge of the architecture of the device. It's a bit hard to say. For the EFRAM, however, I'm pretty sure that the configuration and redundancy registers of the device. So the redundancy registers are the registers which are used to reallocate malfunctioning parts of the device to functioning ones, to functional spares, and These circuits prove that they do get upset under radiation, and they're the cause of the most numerous of those single event failures that we see. So and these are the errors that are reset when you reset the device.
Okay, so this is good because you can do this power cycling. So this is why you can use this power cycling.
And so I really think that this is the most vulnerable part of the device, You could harden those registers by using bit unorthodox architectures like eight-transistor memory cells or dice cells. And so this would only cost a small increase in the peripheral circuit area. But I think it would greatly improve the resistance.
But you need to talk to the the manufacturer. Yes, they need to change. But for us, as a user, you cannot do anything.
As a user,
only
you can
maybe
only
refreshing, resetting the device. Yeah. And then, for example, it's very interesting because, for example, a variability of the technology is there. For example, for SRAM, it's very well studied. For flash, not so much yet. And then for the magneto of almost none, yes. But maybe the variability can play an important role also when if you try to correlate the variability of the memory itself with your data that you have showed that you have many different error rates according to the position of the array and so on, yes.
To the position
mostly in the SRAM.
You mean the variability of like from device to device? You mean?
The variability of from one device to the other, but inside the same device, for example, in the memory array, you may see some variability in the one SRAM cell compared to the other.
Yes.
And then this variability has probably contributed to what you saw in the terms of error rate, from one block to the other and so on. Now for the chapter 5, more about the dynamic test, can you tell us a little bit how you chose, of course, that this is page 54, March test, all these dynamic tests are well-known tests for testing memory after fabrication, And this was your idea, to take this standard test and apply for testing.
Yes, so actually these are tests that were used by my group before me. But there's a good reason that we chose this test in particular. For example, the dynamic stress test is very very good at stressing SRAMs because it has been proved by my colleague here, Luigi, that successive reads on a memory cell can make it weaker, more sensitive to radiation. It puts it in a more repeated read operations puts it in a less stable position, and also thanks to a mechanism known as read equivalent stress, all the memory cells that are on the same row as the accessed cell are also sensitized in the same way. So using this dynamic stress test, for example, is a great way to have maximum sensitivity on an SRAM device. Also, we used other tests such as the MATS Plus. The MATS Plus is also a well-known test, and it's useful because it takes few operations. So you can scan fastly across the memory array. Yet it's very efficient at detecting all sorts of failures. And so having a test that can scan quickly across the memory array was a good way to ensure that there is high switching activity in the periphery, in the address decoders, for example, and so to put a maximum amount of stress on the periphery.
Do you think, for example, if you redo one of your SRAM tests with a program, let's say a standard program, that of course there are benchmarks for that, but do you think that this stress will be so much lower that maybe many of the problems, failures from the circuitry, you will not see it?
I don't know if I can say that, but what I can say is that you do see an increase in measured quad section depending on the algorithm that you use.
But the failure modes probably will be the same,
because
I think they are there,
yes.
I think so too, yes. And then for the address sequence in natural column, just a curiosity, why you chose this? So
it's because, for example, if
this
you...
This is the next page, I think.
if you use, for example, a gray addressing, so counting in gray binary code means that between two successive digits, the binary representation will only change by one bit. So, for example, if you visit the address space of the memory by counting in gray code, you ensure minimal switching activity in the address decoders. And on the opposite, if you use inverse gray, anti-gray, you maximize this switching activity. Then we had the LFSR, so linear feedback shift register address scheme. So this one is maybe one of the closest to actual operating conditions with small files, because then you will pick at pseudo-random locations the addresses. And then fast row and fast columns, so this was only available on the devices where we knew the address scrambling schemes, so the SRAM devices. These are useful. You can scan the array like in a physically like horizontal or vertical fashion. So this way, combined with the read equivalent stress, for example, visiting all the cells on one line in a row.
No, I think it was very nice. It was very clever to think about all these ways to test and then to maximize and minimize it. For the physical address, so some of the information that you had, for example, you needed to do some reverse engineering, or you had, a direct access to the manufacturer?
So we had some information from the manufacturer in those cases.
Because this is really important, yes, some very complex devices. Okay. And then maybe page 60. No, I just had to show that it's interesting. So this is one of some of the types of the faults, yes. And then, but you also already answered. So, for example, for the multiple bit upsets, some of them will be covered by the ECC, as you said, because of the interleaving of the bits. But the failures from the circuitry, there is not much you can do.
No.
Which then we need the most in the system level to reload the data or...
Because not only some of these failures may just overload the ECC, but also some of these failures can occur downstream from the ECC. So, for example, at the output buffers or... For example, in those cases, the CEFI type A, like the cluster type A, could be corrected by the ECC, because those are just a few isolated cells on the array. But all the rest,
This is very scary because the challenge at system level to one is going to design is how to identify that this failure has occurred to make it some action, because you could, if it's SRAM, you could load your data from your flash or from your magnetic again if you think that data is safe, but you needed to know the right moment to do that. Yes, and this is a challenge, but it's good. It's more work to do, more research to investigate. Yes, and then figure 50 is page 65, so you have all these figures just to point out. So this is very interesting as well. Yes, so shows the, of course, it depends about the row and the column. You have more variability or less variability, but it's interesting to see that you see some, in some cases, 20-30% of difference, which is not negligible, yes. And if you have data from the fabricant, from the manufacturer, in terms of variability, and in the future to have a correlation with how is the corner cases, because at spice level you could maybe to...
We don't have this sort of information on the variability. No. We have the scrambling schemes.
Also on table 3, page 68, but it's just more to point out, because then you also show here for many different particles, the variability of the error rate in the block to block, yes. Mm-hmm. So then this is actually more far away. A curiosity is that each block, do you think that they have different power trees or other things?
Yeah, it could come from this, although this is more of a constatation than an explanation.
But it's big. Yes, can reach sometimes 300% of variability in the block.
Clearly, a stronger region in the device.
It's interesting. And also for the layout, that's page 66, just to show about so the cells that are closer to the body tie, to the tap cells, they are actually less susceptible.
Yes.
So, but yeah, so if you want to explain a little bit more the physical phenomena,
I think it's that the charge cloud generated by the incoming particle can be for the cells that are closest to those well taps, which are like connections between the substrate of the memory and the ground lines. So in those cells that are closest to those well taps, the cloud of charge carriers generated by the incoming particle can be swept away and collected at those points instead of being collected in the transistor. So of course this results in a less effective collected charge.
No, that's great. And I think this result is very interesting too, because also the manufacturers can think about adding more tap cells. Yes.
But of course that's a trade-off, because then you lose useful
The area, the density, area. Of course, it costs more. But
depends on the application.
It's true. About the low protons and muons, can you just talk about a little bit about, for example, the challenge that was for you to use the Monte Carlo radiation energy deposition tool to understand the phenomena? You know, it's just
So for this, actually, I was held by Arthur as my supervisor to use the MRED code. The main difficulty in this test campaign was to actually irradiate the devices, because this is really an emerging field. Very few people do muon testing on devices, because for the moment most devices are not sensitive to radiation. So this means that around the world there's no muon testing facility. So then you have to use equipment that's meant for high energy physics. And you have to rig your experiment as best you can. So I think that was the most difficult part, to effectively quantify the energy of the beam at the surface of the device, because of course those lines are tuned for high energy physics, and we want to use low energy muons. So you're working at the edge of the capacities of the equipment, and the hardest thing was to ensure that you were getting quality beam and quality data.
Oh, great, yes, it's very good. Now for the ferroelectric random memory. So about the results, we have many results from pages 76 to 82, so it's a lot.
Yes.
But mostly I would like to ask, because you mentioned in the text the type 4 error, that you use X-ray tests in these memories, yes?
Yes.
And then for X-ray, you had a total ionizing dose effect. But for the power cycling, this will help also the total ionizing, because then I was a little bit confused.
Actually, we used pulse X-rays in this case.
Okay.
So since effectively every area in the device was only hit once by an X-ray pulse, we consider the TID effect to be really negligible.
You are not using X-ray to emulate total ionizing dose.
No,
just a pulse.
No. It was really focused pulse X-rays. So in the end, there's only very few little X-ray deposited. And
which was the technology of the flash memory?
You mean the feature size?
Yes.
No, you mean NAND or NOR? It was a NAND flash.
Yeah, but they said about the technology. I mean, there is no pitch technology.
I don't have the pitch information.
No. Okay. About for example, the magnetic RAM. So you had a lot of latch-up. So in the end, you propose that, first of all, you needed to have a latch-up control to, for example, analyze the rays of current and cut and so on, yes. But besides that, do you think that will be enough to just be able to observe that you are going to have a latch-up and trying to block? Or you needed to do something extra? What is your final idea? I mean, of course, it's complex.
it is complex. It's hard to predict that you're going to have an increase in current, of course, because typically these things are... as I say here, we have two different behaviors for this memory. We have what I call the current excursions, and these ones are typically increases in the supply current of a few milliamps, and these only occur in static modes, and Typically, these conditions disappear spontaneously by themselves. So I would say that if you see an increase in current of just a few milliamps like that, it's probably maybe not worth to cut off power to the device if current consumption is not too big an issue. But of course, you should use a delacher and always cut the power to the device if you start seeing increases of a few tens to higher milliamps. Because this will destroy the device. This has happened several times. And in particular, depending on the application in space, for example, where you have no real possibility for passive cooling, you should absolutely use.
Okay, but to avoid to lose the data that has been stored there, you needed to, for example, to also try to avoid these currents, yes?
Yes, so I didn't see any corruption of the data with the current excursions. I did see them with the latch-ups, but of course you don't want latch-ups anyway. So
By avoiding the latch-up, you avoid the problem.
Yeah.
So
yes.
Actually, this memory is good beside of the latch-up.
Yes.
If you can cope with the latch-up, it's a good.
But again, it's a first commercial product, so
it's, of course, it's going to be improved in the next years. And about this, the test setup with the FPGA board that you have presented. You are using this Spartan 3E, yes, with 50 megahertz. Just like, for example, this, all the design that you have inside this FPGA, do you see the need to improve the frequency to access your test case memories?
Yes, actually that's one thing we're thinking on now, to move on to another FPGA platform than the Spartan 3, to be able to test those memories at higher frequencies. Because for the moment, we are limited by the FPGAs that we are using.
But your methodology and design is pretty, I think, general. So it's just actually synthesized to the new FPGA and do a minor change.
It's very flexible. And actually, the portion of bitmap that I show here with on the MRAM chapter, I just adapted the program that I developed for the FRAM. Just increase the size of the memory array for processing, but in the end, this methodology can be applied to any memory, even if you don't know the address coming scheme. So yes,
it's great.
Flexible.
It's very general. It can be adapted. Yes, very good. Yes. And then for the coming back from the satellite, I'm almost in my end. So, for example, you are going to have the memories in the satellite as a test bed, but it's a lot of very complex to analyze the data that you are getting. Of course, space is much more boring than accelerators because you are going to see not so many errors as you saw on Earth with the accelerated process. But you will have, hopefully, some few errors, yes. And do you see your methodology helping to collect this data? Or do you, for example, how do you see this data is going to be sent to Earth? If it's going to be analyzed a little bit in the CubeSat itself, it's complex.
Because, of course, we're limited by the processing power that we have on board. So in the case of very large-scale functional interrupts or like very large-scale events occurring, as in the 90 nanometer, we can't afford to store information on the address and the data of every bit that is upset. So we came to a compromise that when we start to read back the device, past a certain number of events, we will stop logging the address and data, and we will just start counting the number of upset bits and send this information to the ground somewhere. So in that respect, we won't have any bitmaps available from this on-orbit testing with large error clusters.
But you need to have some some brain on board to at least to recognize the events, because you cannot just send
course.
The...
Of course, but this is what the FPGA is going to do. But still, with the data that we're going to get, we can still identify, for example, manufacturing defects, more sensitive regions, these sort of things. And of course, you can get an error count, even though it doesn't really give you a cross-section.
Actually, for example, to help to diagnose the type of events that you got on space.
Yeah, typically you can say that because, as you said, like at each memory read, we will see at first at most a few upsets. So if all of a sudden we see 100,000, we know that it's a type D event.
Great. And the last question is about more like a comment. Or then, for example, we were talking about the FPGA and the array of FPGA, that the configuration memory array can be seen as a big memory array, yes. So how do you see to extend your methodology to analyze also how these bit flips and multiple bit upsets occur in an array on an FPGA, that's a programmable device, yes. And also to help to understand better, yes, because the FPGAs are getting very complex as well, and all this variability in blocks and positions probably you can see also in an FPGA, yes.
Yes, so actually we've done some FPGA testing. We haven't reported the results because we saw no upsets. We radiated zinc.
No upsets.
With muons. We radiated with muons.
Okay.
Yes. So we didn't make a whole chapter on this. But the difficulty in this type of testing is to actually know what is the structure of what you're testing. So in this case, we got in touch with the manufacturer and they processed all this data for us. But
you didn't see any bit flip from muons.
No.
No.
No, not at all. So in those cases, when we, because the problem is that you. It depends on what you're testing. If you're testing an implemented block RAM on the device, of course you can apply this methodology. But we were also interested in testing the configuration memory, and that we can't process with my methodology because the data is not directly accessible for you as a user when you're using the manufacturer's tools to program and etc. So you have to have someone from the manufacturer's side to help you process your data. So of course they could apply this methodology on their side. But
no, but I think it's something that you can look for, yes. And
yes.
Okay. Yes, thank you very much. I think, yes, congratulate again for the thesis, yes.
Thank you.
And so I would like to say that first to congratulate Alexandre Brosse for the thesis. I think he has made a wonderful contribution. And based on his presentation and all the argumentation that we had, the discussions, and then I strongly advise, yes, the faculty of University of Givascula to extend the PhD degree to Alexandre Louis Bosse for his excellent thesis achievement. Yes, congratulations.
Thank you, Mrs. Opponent. So I now invite those members of the audience which have comments to give on my thesis to ask for an address from the Custos.
Okay, no questions. So the public examination has been concluded.